Well, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Associated Press story says Americans are consistent in their beliefs, conflicted in their views when it comes to abortion. There's a new AP Ipsos poll out. We're going to be walking through some of its findings with David Osteen, Executive Director of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. That conversation here in the second hour is going to last about 15 minutes. We'll be joined right after that by Bill Beckman, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life based in Chicago. The headlines from the Post-Dispatch leading up to some rather important elections, especially in the state of Illinois, the gubernatorial election, outlining the various views of the candidates on the life issue. Bill Beckman will share some of those with us. And then we've got open lines for your questions and your comments from 4:30 till 5:30. Audio open lines. We'll start out with an NBC Meet the Press short interview between Tim Russert and the Virginia governor, who says, well, he thinks that the South Dakota laws are good ideas and it should happen more often. David Osteen is Executive Director of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. David, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Do you think that these polls, like the AP Ipsos poll, really reflect what Americans think about abortion?
No. The AB Ipsos poll doesn't, because it doesn't really specifically ask under what circumstances abortion should be allowed. And you can see some internal conflict here when you look at the fact that the polls indicate support, majority support for Roe v. Wade, but in the same poll it showed that 56% says that state governments should regulate abortion, should decide when abortion should be allowed, and 57% federal governments should decide. And, of course, anyone that really knows what Roe v. Wade said knows that Roe v. Wade does not allow the legislative branch, either state or federal, to prohibit abortion in any meaningful way. So, in fact, Roe v. Wade has been interpreted by the Supreme Court to even allow partial birth abortion. Now, that issue is coming back before the court, but the court ruled 5-4 regarding a Nebraska law earlier that Roe v. Wade even protected partial birth abortion, which many polls have shown an overwhelming majority of the public opposes. So the ABC Ipsos poll also had another result that was in conflict with a string of earlier results, where it purported to show a majority that believed abortion should be legal either in all cases or most cases. And Gallup polling, where their question is, should abortion be illegal in all circumstances, legal in a few circumstances, legal under most circumstances, or legal under any circumstances, that polling has pretty consistently showed since 95 that a majority believes abortion should be illegal in all or legal in a few circumstances. Their May 2005 poll found 62% taking one of those two positions, 22% that would prohibit all abortion, and 40% would have made abortion legal only in a few circumstances.
But, well, okay. Go ahead. Given that caveat on poll results, do you see the opinion of Americans trending one way or the other on the issue of abortion?
There has been movement in the pro-life direction since the mid-90s, and we've even reached essentially parity on the labeling question, are you pro-life or pro-choice? For a long time, from the 70s to, say, the mid-90s, you would routinely get a plurality or a majority self-IDing as pro-choice. And you could, incidentally, in the same poll, when you asked them specifically when abortion should be allowed, you could have, I've seen polls where as many as 10% of the population would believe abortion should be allowed only in cases of to protect the life of the mother, or in cases of rape or incest, but at the same time would self-ID as pro-choice. So clearly they've been sold that label because it's been a popular label in the media. But today we've reached parity, and you very often get essentially an equal split between the labels. But that still is tilted, I believe, to the pro-abortion side because the pro-choice label has been sold as a positive thing. If you, one poll way of asking the abortion question that I think is helpful has been done by the previous Worthland firm and most recently by the polling company. And Worthland did this from the 80s forward several times a year, where you would ask people, should abortion never be legal? Should it be legal only to save the life of the mother? Should it be legal only to save the life of the mother in cases of rape or incest? Or should it be legal for any reason but prohibited after 3 months, legal for any reason during the first 6 months, or legal for any reason during any time of pregnancy? And with that, taking the first three categories, prohibiting all abortion, life of mother only, or life, rape, incest, and labeling those as pro-life as a matter of convenience now, and the other three as pro-choice, the pro-life side on that question would consistently get a plurality or majority. And in the April 2005 polling company poll, 62% took one of the pro-life categories. And it's that question, incidentally, I was comparing. I've seen often Worthman would also ask, do you call yourself pro-life or pro-choice? And it was in those polls that I saw this anomaly of up to 10% of the population that would self-ID pro-choice and then say abortion should be allowed at most to save the life of the mother in cases of rape and incest. So clearly, labels don't work. And I think sweeping questions questions about Roe certainly don't work because we've seen repeatedly people that will say that they support Roe, not understanding what Roe is or how sweeping Roe is.
I want to talk about that, Roe, because you brought that up in response to the first question. The misperception about what Roe really did and didn't do seems to come up again and again and again. As we talk about, be it the Supreme Court, be it the polling data, anything having to do with abortion, guest after guest will say the American public is under a terrible misunderstanding, misconception about what Roe really permits and what is really possible under Roe. How absolute Roe was as a decision. Would you explain it to us?
Correct. Roe v. Wade, and as modified with the Casey decision later, essentially allows abortion for any reason. It allows abortion for any reason, and essentially through pregnancy. Roe spoke of allowing abortion to be restricted to only reasons of health in the last trimester, but then in the companion Doe Bolton case, the court defined health to include mental, psychological factors, the woman's age, and, quote, anything affecting her general feeling of well-being. So under Roe and Doe, if it is simply asserted that it is done for the, quote, health, including anything affecting her general feeling of well-being, which can be anything, it's abortion for any reason to birth. And people don't understand that. Roe generally described, I'm sure you've seen polls and the listeners have seen polls that described Roe as allowing a woman and her physician to decide if she needs an abortion in the first 3 months of pregnancy. As soon as you throw physician in there, and we all know abortionists plying their trades, this is not your family doctor. This is not her physician that she normally goes to in the vast majority of cases. This is an abortionist that is doing assembly line abortions. But when you conjure that question up, when the public sees this, there's a picture drawn by that question of the woman consulting with her physician. There's a problem. We're talking about abortion in the first trimester. And many people think that's what Roe is. And so you'll have people say they support Roe and turn around overwhelmingly, like three-quarters of the population, say they oppose partial birth abortion, which is part of Roe at this point, or say they another question that I've seen several times, do you believe abortion should be allowed as a method of birth control? I've seen as high as 80% saying no to that. And yet that's precisely what Roe is, because essentially 90% of the abortions are performed as a method of birth control. By that I mean, for the reasons one would use birth control, that you simply don't want to have a child at this time. You know, it's less than 10% of the abortions that are done where there's any hint that there's a health problem of the mother, or there's any fetal handicap, or the mother's life's in danger, or there's been rape or any kind of felonious intercourse. So really you've got 80% of the population opposing the performance of 90% of the abortions. And so polls like the one that's just been released don't get to that at all. You have to actually ask people when they think abortion should be performed or not performed, and for what reasons and at what stage, to get to where they really feel.
Has National Right to Life taken a position, or does it plan to take a position on the South Dakota law that was recently signed by Governor Rounds there that bans all abortions in that state, with the only exception it permits is if the life of the mother is in danger? Has National Right to Life taken a position?
Our position has been since 1973 that abortion should be allowed only to save the life of the mother, and we're working to build a legal climate where that's possible. The only thing we've pointed out is that currently the Supreme Court has at best a 4 votes out of 9, at best 4 out of 9, to overturn Roe v. Wade. 5 members of the court, well, three members of the court have actually voted to affirm Roe, and 2 members appointed after Casey, Ginsburg and Breyer, have made very well known their support of Roe. So you've got 5 votes for Roe. Thomas and Scalia are known to oppose Roe, and Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito have never voted on the question, and that's why I said if they were to oppose Roe, you would have 4 votes. So right now,
it's still a 5.
There's 5-4 against it at best.
What does that mean, given the fact that this law is very likely, if the governor decides to push any kind of court injunction that's going to put it on the back burner, if the governor decides to push it all the way to the Supreme Court, what does that most likely mean if the court, when it gets there, is presently comprised the way it is?
Well, the court, of course, might not take up the case. It takes 4 votes to take up the case, in which case it...
they might just leave it to a lower court decision.
Well, a lower court following court precedent would strike it. I mean, the Roe v. Wade still remains the standing Supreme Court decision, or Roe v. Wade is modified by Casey. So assuming that the lower courts strike it, now if it were to be upheld, there would certainly be 4 votes on the court to take it up, because there's 5 members on the court that oppose Roe. But assuming the lower courts strike it, and then the court might not take it up. If they did take it up, there's 5 votes to strike it down. And, I mean, that's what happens.
Finally,
and I don't know of anyone that would, you know, question those figures.
Finally, just a paragraph from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch story, American mm-hmm. holds firm to views on abortion, that I'd like your reaction to. Tell me if you think this is true, and if it is, what needs to be done in the future to move the American people in the direction they seem to be trending. The paragraph is, the AP Ipsos poll finds that most Americans are in what one analyst calls the big, mushy middle on this issue. Is that true? And if so, how do we move Americans out of the big, mushy middle?
Well, I don't know how really mushy that middle is, but it is true that for a long time, let's say half the population does not stand either where I do or where the National Abortion Rights Action League does, in that, as I said, the position of the National Right to Life Committee is that abortion should be allowed only to save the life of the mother, and the abortion of the position of Nayrald is that abortion should always be allowed. And when I look at this 2005 polling company firm, I've got 31% that would allow abortion only to save the life of the mother. In other words, 70% that would prohibit it, including to save the life of the mother, and 14% that would allow it to save the life of the mother, giving me 31% there. And at most, 14% think it should be allowed for any reason, either through 6 months or 9 months of pregnancy. So you put the rest of the population thought in this particular polling company poll thought it should be allowed at least in cases of rape and incest, and there was 21% that thought it should be allowed for any reason through the first 3 months of pregnancy. But those are specific opinions. When I say it's not so mushy, you know, when 31% says abortion should be allowed at most for life of mother, rape, or incest, they have an opinion. It's just that the opinion does not necessarily fall precisely, I would consider those people essentially pro-life. I mean, they want to prohibit almost all abortions, but they do not fall precisely where the National Right to Life Committee is or where NARAL is, but they are so much closer to the pro-life position of the pro-life organizations than they are to the abortion for any reason, any time position of the pro-abortion movement. And the way to really what created this situation in the first place was the Supreme Court denying people their right to act through the democratic process and resolve the issue. I mean, in our form of representative democracy, issues are normally debated, discussed, laws are passed, and after some time, a consensus does develop. And the Supreme Court decision stifled that. And I do believe Roe will be reversed at some point. But you have to have five justices on the court who are not committed to abortion on demand and who will interpret the Constitution according to its actual text. So there still have to be further changes on the court.
NRLC.org is the website address for the National Right to Life Committee based in Washington, D.C. NRLC.org. David Osteen is Executive Director of National Right to Life there in D.C. David, it's a pleasure, and thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Well, for the remainder of this segment of Issues, Etc., Bill Beckman joins us. Another newspaper headline, Topinka leads among GOP field on the jump page, a comparison side-by-side of the Illinois gubernatorial candidates on the life issues. Bill Beckman is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life based in Chicago. Bill, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Good day.
Let's begin with Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Where does he stand on the life issues? How would you characterize his position?
Strongly pro-abortion on virtually every issue. Strongly, pro, and all other life issues beyond abortion is to the same side. In other words, he's strongly pushing embryonic stem cell research, for example.
Talk about his record as Illinois governor. Give us some specific legislative measures or issues wherein you find his strong pro-choice position.
Well, for example, in terms of the concept of parental notification, I mean, he wanted parental notification or controlling tattoos, but when people confronted him with about the same issue with abortion, he basically maintained that no, there should be no parental notification relating to abortion. Now, in regard to like whether or not there should be informed consent for women, he's demonstrated that he's strongly opposed to any kind of regulation that would basically require abortionists to make the risks of abortion known to women. Across the board, on any of the reasonable items that are passing in numerous states and are already law in quite a few states, he's strongly opposed to all of those kind of regulations.
The most likely opponent to Governor Blagojevich in a gubernatorial race would be, at least according to the polls today, Judy Bartapinka. Where does she stand on the life issues?
Well, she says she's pro-choice, and she you know, normally would come down similar positions to him, but there are a few exceptions that are of interest. One is that she indicates that she would support parental notification laws. Another case is that the ban on partial birth abortion, which at this point, of course, is going to be decided at the national level based on going before the Supreme Court. But she did indicate that she would be supporting a ban on partial birth abortion, whereas Blagojevich would never support such a ban. Those are the two key examples where there is at least some difference, and that does have something to do with why when Judy Bartapinka announced her candidacy that some of the abortion supporters and their organizations came out and expressed concern about Judy's candidacy is that she was deceiving, you know, people by claiming she was pro-choice, showing just how radical they are, of course.
Talk about Eisendrath, Edwin Eisendrath. He's third in the polling locally in Illinois as to who would get the voters' nod for the governor's seat there in Springfield. What do we know about his positions on the life issues?
Well, based on his own website, he says he supports abortion rights, and he includes in that he supports public funding through Medicaid. So that means, in other words, he wants the taxpayers to pay for it. And he also, which is not a directly related thing, but certainly goes with the territories, he also states there that he supports civil unions for gays. So it's like, so he's a very liberal candidate, let's put it that way.
On the Republican side, again, Jim Oberweiss is apparently giving Judy Bartapinka a run for her money when it comes to the primary, but where does he stand on life issues?
He is basically strongly pro-life across the board. I mean, he basically supports, you know, he sees no right to abortion. In other words, so he basically does not make exceptions, including for rape and incest. He's strongly for parental notification and consent laws. He's for a ban on partial birth abortion. He's for pharmacists' rights so that they would not be denied their rights in terms of making decisions not to dispense, like morning after pills. He's against embryonic stem cell research, and he's against having the morning after pill be distributed over the counter. So, you know, basically across the board on all the relevant and current life issues, he's strongly in life.
Bill Beckman is our guest. Bill, would you stay with us for a minute or two on the other
sure.
side of this break?
Absolutely.
Bill is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life based in Chicago. We're going to be talking with him for just a few more minutes on the other side of this break about the Illinois gubernatorial candidates on the life issues. So it appears, especially when it comes to that Republican primary for governor that's coming up in 2 weeks, there's a real difference between the front runner, Judy Bartapinka, and Jim Oberweiss on the life issues. And on the Democratic side, not a lot of difference between those who are running there in the primary. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. After our conversation with Bill Beckman, audio open lines for your questions and your comments.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith, culture editor for World Magazine, on the value of LCMS World Relief.
Well, you know, whenever I see news of a disaster or a terrorist attack or a natural calamity, I hear that just immediately they're on the front lines of this. And as a Lutheran, I feel so proud about that, not in a boastful way, but I feel happy that Lutherans care about the suffering of others, as our theology teaches us to, that we're to live out our faith in love and service to our neighbors.
LCMS World Relief provides Christ-centered, cross-focused care and concern. For more information, contact them at 314-996-1683 or look for the LCMS World Relief logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Kim Troby, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. outraged that his elementary-age daughter was able to check out a book on homosexuality from the kids' section of the library, an Oklahoma parent asked the library to remove it. They refused. Josh Montez tells us that refusal has raised the ire of Oklahoma lawmakers.
The movies will be due on March 17th.
Pikes Peak Library Director Sydney Dean occasionally gets complaints about books in her library.
Sometimes it's remove the books, and sometimes it's more appropriate for the adult or the young adult collection. And just move it to another section.
That's just what State Representative Sally Kern asked of the Oklahoma library system. Instead, they moved the questionable books to a higher shelf, still in the kids section. She's working on a bill that would cut funding for libraries that refuse to regulate books with homosexual and sexual themes to the adult section.
It's harmful to our children. It is destroying. It's jeopardizing their future. It is violating parental rights.
Well, that's her opinion.
Jeannie Johnson is with the Oklahoma Library Association.
We select materials carefully, but some people are offended by the slightest mention of sexual incident.
But Kern says some kids' books even made her colleagues blush.
We're talking graphic, vile stuff that no parent in their right mind would want their child to be reading that kind of stuff.
Steve Crampton is with the American Family Association.
Nobody's saying you must remove the books from the shelf. All they're saying is put them in a restricted access section.
He says it all comes down to protecting our kids. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
A recent survey found 88% of Oklahomans think children's books with homosexual themes should be in the adult section of public libraries. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
How do you describe Worldwide KFUO's new high-definition broadcast to folks accustomed to listening on traditional analog AM radios? Imagine that AM 850 KFUO now sounds like an FM station when heard over the latest digital radios. You're in stereo with no static. Be assured that our HD broadcast will still work on your old radio, but when you make the switch, the music will sound like a CD on AM 850 KFUO.
Issues Etc. is partially underwritten by Concordia Publishing House, publishers of our Book of the Month for March, He Is Risen Indeed. You can find a description of this picture book on our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, titled He Is Risen Indeed.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're concluding our conversation with Bill Beckman, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. We're talking about some of the Illinois gubernatorial candidates on the life issue. Following this conversation, we have audio open lines. We'll stick with the life issue and talk with you about a piece of audio we have from Tim Russert's Meet the Press, where he speaks with the Virginia governor. The Virginia governor. Am I right? And he talks to him about the whole issue of what he would allow if a state decided that it didn't want to have abortion like South Dakota. It's an interesting conversation. It's open lines, and we want to hear from you in just a few minutes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bill, let's talk about a couple more of these candidates, even though the percentages dropped pretty considerably, at least according to the poll that's in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Moving again to the Republican side, there is Ron Gidwitz. What do we know about him on the life issue?
Okay, well, he's relatively similar to Judy Barta Pinka. In other words, he supports the right to abortion. He does say that he supports parental consent and a ban on partial birth abortion. But he's at a minimum a question mark on other issues like pharmacist rights, embryonic stem cell research, and whether or not morning after pills should be sold over the counter.
So what would it mean? I mean, just from your perspective, what would it mean to have a Topinka win in the governor's in the state house come November?
Well,
in terms of the life issues, would there be any real shift in Illinois?
It would basically be a very minor shift of degree, because primarily the only things that we're aware of that she would actually be, you know, on our side of the issue would be the parental notification and the ban on partial birth abortion. And in the case of the ban on partial birth abortion, there's really no chance that there's going to be something taken up at the state level, given the fact they're going to wait for what happens at the federal level. And the parental notification is actually a very unique case as well, because in reality there's a law that's already on the books that is currently waiting for the Supreme Court of Illinois to write the judicial bypass rules, and effectively if that was something that would occur, then there would never be anything that the governor would even be forced to sign, and the law would just go into effect, so that there's really no direct action that she needs to take on either of those things to basically say that she's for, you know, far our position on those two issues.
What does it say about the Illinois Republican Party that, number one, Judy Bartopinka has been its head for some time and seems to be a viable candidate, only holding the views that she does, so very similar to the present Governor Blagojevich?
Well, unfortunately, it seems that the party regulars in Illinois don't represent the platform of the Republican Party to any great degree, and so it's been this way for years. Actually, you know, during the period when we had about 30 years of Republican governors in a row, we really never had any pro-life governor in the entire stretch.
One of those was, of course, Governor George Ryan, who's in the news for other reasons, but he presented himself, at least when he was running, as a pro-life, but turned out, when he got to Springfield, not to be.
Yeah, he was the worst case, because I mean, we knew the other ones at least declared their position and led the voters to know what they were going to do, and they did what they said. In his case, he said one thing to the voters, and then when he got into office, he switched his positions, and that was certainly a much more egregious offense.
And didn't his speaking of Governor Ryan, didn't his Democratic challenger Glenn Pichard state that he was pro-life?
He did indicate pro-life position similar to George Ryan. So in that sense, I mean, a typically informed voter would be able to say that they were pretty much equal and would be able to make a judgment on other issues. And obviously they did so and chose the Republican. But in reality, you know, in hindsight, we don't really know. But it would seem at least that there was some potential that we would have had a better choice if Ryan had lost that election.
A quick phone call here as we wrap up our conversation with Bill Beckman. Herman is calling from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask Mr. Beckman, how does Jim Oberweis stand on homosexual marriage and special rights?
Thank you, Herman.
He is strongly opposed to homosexual marriage. He is very strongly in favor of the defense of marriage, and is actually actively, during his campaign, is actually actively promoting the referendum to put that on the ballot for defending marriage.
How likely is an Oberweis win in the primaries coming up in 2 weeks?
Well, it's really a difficult call, but all I can say is that in recent elections, the nominee of the Republican Party regulars has not really done well. I mean, in the senatorial race when it was Fitzgerald, he was not the party regulars nominee. And there were some earlier races, both for Senate and governor, where the party nominee, you know, lost to the grassroots, you know, nominee that was basically out there independently. And so, you know, it's very doable that, you know, an Oberweis win could occur, but you know, obviously, you know, it's a question of how much stock you can put in the polls, I guess.
Bill Beckman is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life, based in Chicago. Their website address, illinoisrighttolife.org, illinoisrighttolife.org. Bill, thanks for being our guest. Thanks for giving us those extra few minutes.
Oh, you're very welcome, and have a good day.
Well, for the remainder of this hour and then on into the next, up until 5:30, when we're joined by Dr. Uwe Simonetto to talk about how to write a letter to the editor and how to get it not only written, sent, but also read and published. We're going to have open lines for your questions and your comments. Staying on this subject, at least in a tangential way, a lot of reaction to that South Dakota law, and some of it came Sunday morning on Tim Russert's Meet the Press. He was interviewing former Virginia governor and present senator from Virginia, George Allen, getting his thoughts on states banning abortion.
Something else happened this week, Senator Allen, in South Dakota. And this is how the New York Times reported. Governor Michael Rounds, the Republican governor of South Dakota, signed into law the nation's most sweeping state abortion law ban. The law makes it a felony to perform any abortion except in a case of a pregnant woman's life being in jeopardy. No exceptions for rape, incest, health of the mother. Would you like to see that law the law of the United States of America?
Well, first of all, I respect and support the right of the people in the states to pass laws that reflect their values and their desires. For the country, I think each state ought to make those decisions. Personally, I think that there should be exceptions for rape and incest because I look at the person there as a victim of a crime, and if they so choose, they ought to have that option.
But you would outlaw all abortion except in cases of rape and
I don't think the federal government ought to be making such laws. I think the laws ought to be determined by the people in the states. If South Dakota wants a law like that, they can have that. If South Carolina wants a different law, that's up to South Carolina or Virginia or California.
And if a state said unlimited abortion on demand, you would abide by that?
While I don't agree with that approach.
But you said states should have the right.
But if state did that, I can't imagine too many states or any state having one that allows abortion for all 9 months for any reason or no reason at all. But that would be the right of the people of states. And for those, but if a state like South Dakota wants a law like that, even though it's not exactly what I would think is appropriate, that does reflect the will of the people. This is a representative democracy, and I think that's appropriate.
That would mean that Roe versus Wade would have to be overturned, which you would support.
I think Roe versus Wade has been interpreted in such a way that it precludes the rights of the people to decide their laws. When I was governor, we passed a law on parental notification. I think parents ought to be involved if a girl who's 16, 17-year-old.
So you say overturn Roe. You hope Roe is overturned.
If you need parental notification for ear piercing or a tattoo, they certainly ought to be involved with it. And so I think Roe versus Wade has been interpreted in such a way as to restrict the will of people. Moreover, that decision was from the early 1970s, and medical science has advanced a great deal. We know a lot more, and, of course, unborn children have an earlier stage
of
development. The point is, rather than arguing on a legal term, the point of the matter is the people in the states ought to be making these decisions. And if that's contrary to the dictates of Roe versus Wade, so be it, because the way that Roe versus Wade has been interpreted is taking away the rights of the people in the states to make these decisions.
All right, that was interesting. That was very interesting, and here's why. I don't know if you agree with me or not. It's open lines, issues, et cetera, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That was Tim Russert on Meet the Press talking with one of the brighter lights when it comes to 08 and the Republican nomination for president, Senator George Allen. Now, he got 10% in this straw poll that was taken by the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. Bill Frist, senator, got 37%, but from what I understand from news reports, his people were there. It was mostly his people. Governor Mitt Romney, he came in second with about 14.5%. We've talked about him recently. And then Senator George Allen was number three in that straw poll. Now, it may mean something. It may not mean anything at all, but these are the movers and the shakers and the people who occupy the smoke-filled back rooms. So maybe it means more than just a bunch of people getting together saying, who would you like to be president in 2008? Well, do you notice how often Tim Russert asked him the same question? He, when asked the question about the South Dakota law, it started very early in the interview. Would you support states doing this kind of, essentially, laws banning all abortions? And he said, well, yes, I would. What if a state, the question was asked, what if a state wanted to permit all abortions without exception? There was a bit of silence, and he said, well, I wouldn't like it, but I guess as a matter of principle, we'd have to support that too. See, already they were talking about sending the issue of abortion back to the states. That can't be done, by the way, yet. It can't. Not legally, because Roe still stands. So Russert asks a good question, and he asks it three times. So, Senator Allen, you would be in favor of overturning Roe v. Wade? He didn't answer the question. A second time he asked, so you say overturn Roe v. Wade? And he didn't answer the question. And a third time he said, so overturn it? And he didn't answer the question. Now, these are pro-life senators. These are pro-life candidates, potential candidates for president in 2008. And at this point in history, they're not willing to say, I think that little interview does demonstrate, at least in the case of George Allen, unwilling to say, overturn Roe v. Wade. The two words that you will not hear anyone say yet, overturn Roe. Why not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's clear that he would like to see Roe overturned, that he would like to see, he's talking as though we can already send Roe, or at least the Roe decision, back to the states for every state to reconsider it, like South Dakota. So there's no doubt about whether he wants to see Roe overturned, but he won't say it. What he will say is, well, Roe took rights away from people to make the decision, individual states to make the decision and vote on abortion. That's true. That's very true. What he said was true. It just didn't answer the question, because the question was three times from Tim Russert, so overturn Roe? And those two words did not pass his lips. Why not? I mean, if Allen is indicative of what we will be seeing as possible candidates in the Republican Party for 2008 for president, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Charlie, who calls from his car. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, Charlie.
I want to weigh in on this George Allen talking about Roe versus Wade. I think what Russert was trying to do was just get a soundbite from Allen saying, I want to overturn Roe v. Wade. And I think Allen's point would have been lost then. Allen's point is that this is a matter for the states. When people hear, I want to overturn Roe v. Wade, because they don't know the Constitution, they think that means he wants the federal government to forbid all abortions. And that's not the point Allen was trying to make.
And that's not what would happen if Roe were overturned.
Right. He wants it to go back to the states pre-January 22nd, 1973, which constitutionally I agree with. If you wanted the federal government to outlaw all abortions, then you should take up a constitutional amendment.
Okay. Now, Charlie, stick with me for a second.
Yeah.
But I think Russert is correct in concluding and in asking Governor Allen, former Governor Allen, present Senator Allen, so you mean overturn Roe v. Wade, because the only way that that issue goes back to the states is if Roe disappears.
And then Allen said, the way Roe versus Wade has been interpreted, if that's the way it's been interpreted, so be it. He did say, so be it. He didn't want to be caught in just being soundbited. Or sound bitten.
I like that term. Charlie,
yeah.
Thank you very much. Now, I didn't hear the so be it, so I'll take Charlie at his word. I did not hear the so be it. And so be it is not much of a soundbite. I think, yeah, sure, Russert knows the value of a soundbite, but I think he's also trying to get at the heart of the matter, and he's trying to get these candidates, they are going to have to say it sooner or later. They really will. He's trying to get these potential candidates, George Allen in this case, to say, that means overturning Roe v. Wade. Let's just say it means overturning Roe v. Wade. President George W. Bush, I don't think he's ever said that, not in public. He wants to see Roe overturned. People assume he does. But he's never said it. And the question I have for you is, why won't the pro-life candidates, especially those who are looking at the possibility of a trip to the White House in 2008, why won't they say it? Overturn Roe v. Wade. Send this thing up. Let's see if it happens. There are a number of reasons why they might be saying that, or might be not saying that. I'm not even saying they're being disingenuous. I just want to know why you think those two words, overturn Roe, are so hard to say. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you agree with the caller, Charlie, that if you answer honestly, that soundbite might be used out of context during your campaign? In fact, of course, Tim Russert is looking for something that he could use if George Allen actually becomes a contender to have him back on when he's running for president, which he will come back on and say, in March of 2006, you said the following, Senator Allen, run the soundbite. Do you stand by your words there? Of course. He's a reporter. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I mean, this is important for us to face up to, that the South Dakota law, this is what presents itself to us now. The South Dakota law, if it made it to the Supreme Court and actually was upheld by the Supreme Court, would require the Supreme Court to reverse Roe. We can't live in a fantasy world saying it wouldn't. Or let me ask the question this way. Whether it's Allen or any other presidential candidate, you're pro-life, you're listening to the candidates coming up into 2008. Is so be it enough? Is so be it enough? Or do you want to hear overturn Roe? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines, Issues, etc. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 13th of March. Charlie's already chimed in. He says he did hear Allen say that it would be necessary to overturn Roe v. Wade, but Allen was trying not to get, I love Charlie's term, sound bitten. He was trying not to get sound bitten. Well, we'll come back to this subject in a few minutes. Here's some AP audio. This comes from an update on an ongoing trial in London. It has to do with that best-selling book, actually two best-selling books now, The Da Vinci Code and Holy Blood and Holy Grail.
For more than a week, Dan Brown has been going in and out of court listening to testimony about his best-selling novel, The Da Vinci Code. Now it's his turn to take the stand. Two other authors are suing Brown's publisher for copyright infringement. They say The Da Vinci Code took key ideas and themes from their nonfiction book, The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. Both books explore theories that Jesus married Mary Magdalene, had a child, and that the bloodline survives. In court last week, one of the plaintiffs conceded that several key points in his case were wrong, including a claim that the bestseller contained all of the same historical conjecture as his book.
Brown has traveled from New Hampshire to sit here at the Royal Courts of Justice, where lawyers, authors, and the judge are thumbing through worn paperback copies of the two books. But now, all eyes will be on Brown as he testifies in his book's defense. Melissa Gray, The Associated Press at the High Court, London.
Tell you what, you cannot pay for that kind of advertising. And you cannot pay for that kind of notoriety. It's very nicely... If I'm Dan Brown, I'm sitting at home thinking, yes, I will take a nice trip over to London to sit in the court and defend my book. Especially given the fact that in less than 2 months' time, it's going to come out as a movie. And it doesn't look like, as we've been following this trial, that it's going to do anything to impede the release of The Da Vinci Code to the big screens. Are you going to go see this movie? I was thinking about this drive-in. I heard someone talk about Brokeback Mountain, and I thought to myself, am I ever going to go and rent that movie? And, you know, just having one of those highway moments, and I thought, no, I don't think I'll ever go rent that movie. And it's not necessarily because of the homosexuality issue. It's just because I got better things to do with my time. And I'm not that hot on cowboy movies unless it's Unforgiven. And then I'll watch that movie quite a bit. All right. So will you see The Da Vinci Code? Has this lawsuit stirred your interest in the film that's going to be coming out, the controversy surrounding it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Looking back after a year of the train bombings in Madrid, Spain, NBC News not only is doing a retrospective, but trying to do a bit of an in-depth study of the various faces of Islam.
Now NBC News in depth. Tonight, the many faces of Islam. This weekend marks the second anniversary of the terrorist train bombings in Madrid. No one has been formally charged, but Islamic militants claimed responsibility for those attacks that killed 191 people. Tonight, we continue our joint series with our website, MSNBC.com, with a look at the uneasy existence many Muslims are living these days in Spain. Here's NBC's Donna Friesen.
Islam is woven into the fabric of Spain's history. You see it in the architecture and the people. But since the Madrid train bombings, immigrants like Rasha Sheikhovin, who MSNBC.com interviewed in Granada, are struggling to feel at home here.
You feel some kind of hate or something, you know? I don't know how to explain this, but you feel it.
Of those arrested after the bombings, most were North African, many from the Madrid neighborhood of Lavapied. That's where 23-year-old Yassine Okhiar lives. He's Moroccan but speaks fluent Spanish. A friend of mine with darker skin and a backpack gets suspicious looks on the train, he says. It's understandable, but frustrating. It's as if all immigrants, he says, are paying the price for the crimes of a few.
It's not so easy for Muslims, especially young men, to find jobs here anymore or to rent apartments. There's not overt discrimination, but an underlying suspicion they can't be trusted.
Madrid's main mosque is back to a full house for Friday prayers now, but in the weeks after the bombings, it was almost deserted. Muslims were laying low. Rebuilding trust, says the spokesman for Madrid's Islamic Cultural Center, is taking time.
We are crossing now a very delicate situation for the Muslim people, for the image of Islam.
The threat Islamic militants could strike again in Spain and elsewhere remains high. Last year, two cells operating in Spain were dismantled, according to terrorism expert Rogelio Alonso.
One of them was involved in recruiting people to actually send them abroad to Iraq, for example, to commit suicide.
As long as the threat exists, so will the suspicion. Yassine's Spanish friends go out of their way to make him feel comfortable, and that's what he and others say wider society must do too.
Not judge me without knowing me. Not make any idea about me before making sure is that idea right or not.
That's the challenge facing Spain and other countries in Europe, giving Muslims a voice instead of marginalizing them. Donna Friesen, NBC News, Madrid.
Well, one has to ask a question. If they want a voice, if they want a voice, that voice should be one of peace rather than of things exploding. And let's not make any mistakes here. All Muslims should not be tarred for the actions of a few. But we need to get to the answer to that question that we continually pose when it comes to Islam on this program. What is the real Islam? Let's go to the phones. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Andy, our time is short.
Andy, I'm not going to, excuse me, Todd, I'm not going to go to see Da Vinci Code. Why should I give them my money? It's a pack of lies, and there's just no point to it. And as far as the candidates declaring whether or not they want to overturn Roe versus Wade, we've got to realize that there is a separation in this government. The president can be in favor of overturning Roe, but the most he can do is support Supreme Court justices who might have a tendency to vote that way if the issue comes before the court.
You are quite right, Andy. Thank you very much. And that is the real power of the president when it comes to Supreme Court decisions. So maybe that might be another answer to the question of why they won't say overturn Roe. Because, of course, a Republican president in a 2008-12 term has a very high likelihood of appointing a Supreme Court justice. We've got one of those guys on the court who is an octogenarian. He can't live forever. That might be one answer. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. More audio open lines here on Issues Etc. When we come back from this break, another 25 minutes of that, and then in the last half hour, Uwe Simonetta joins us. You ever written a letter to the editor? Ever had it never published? We can help you out in the last half hour. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.